those distribution points and pointing to where people need to go and at what time will be absolutely critical.
Vaccines are approved. Now a race to deliver. It's Monday, December 14th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Join us as well online. We're on VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, mixed vaccine trial results in Australia. Indonesia floats a larger navy. Food honored during pandemic. Smartphone glass. And keeping holiday traditions. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States has approved emergency use of the Pfizer-BioNTech coronavirus vaccine, and that's paving the way for Americans to begin getting vaccinated within days. But public skepticism about the safety of the vaccine remains, with polls showing many adults say they will not get the shot or are not sure about getting it. White House correspondent Patsy Whitaker-Swara has the latest.
This hospital in Chicago is preparing to deliver COVID-19 vaccines made by Pfizer-BioNTech that were approved for emergency use by the U.S. Food and Drug Administration Friday night. Logistical challenges include keeping the vaccine at the extremely cold temperature of minus 70 degrees Celsius using specially designed temperature-controlled thermal shippers and freezers.
That ultra-low freezer, we can only open for 2 minutes at a time, otherwise it'll go out of range. So we have to be very precise in our movements. And once we take the drug out, we have to move it to the refrigerator within a 10-minute time frame so it doesn't fall into the ultra-quick defrost. If it defrosts too quickly, we only get 2 hours stability. If we can defrost it slowly, we get 5 days of stability.
Immediately following the vaccine's approval, President Donald Trump released a video on Twitter hailing the news as a medical miracle. He said the first immunizations would take place in less than 24 hours.
We want our senior citizens, healthcare workers, and first responders to be first in line. This will quickly and dramatically reduce deaths and hospitalizations.
Trump's announcement followed media reports of his chief of staff threatening to fire the head of the Food and Drug Administration, Stephen Hahn, if he did not grant emergency use approval by Friday.
All of these rooms are full of COVID.
Vaccine approval came as COVID-19 cases soared, with almost 300,000 confirmed deaths. Yet some Americans are skeptical about vaccine safety.
I definitely feel like it's too fast. We don't know the side effects. It hasn't been tested long enough.
We want to make sure that this works for real, you know, because you don't want to take something that is going to make everything worse for you.
A recent survey by the Associated Press shows about half of U.S. adults say they won't get the vaccine or are unsure if they will.
Good afternoon, everyone.
President-elect Joe Biden, who spoke Friday morning after the vaccine was recommended but not yet approved, sought to allay public skepticism of political influence in its approval.
You should have confidence in this. There is no political influence. These are first-rate scientists taking their time looking at all of the elements that need to be looked at. Scientific integrity led us to this point.
Despite the vaccine's approval, there is still much planning and details to be finalized at the state and local level in terms of when and where Americans can get the vaccine.
In the case of healthcare workers, you can find them in healthcare settings. So, and in the case of long-term care residents, certainly they're in long-term care facilities. So it may not mean as much for the first two priority groups. But once you start to talk about essential workers, the elderly, those distribution points and pointing to where people need to go and at what time will be absolutely critical.
The U.S. is now the sixth country to approve this two-dose regimen, including Britain, Bahrain, Canada, Saudi Arabia, and Mexico. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News.
There is so much more on this story, and you can find it online at VOA Asia, on our Twitter stream, Facebook, and at our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. Activist monks flee Cambodia, fearing arrest and defrocking. Laos presses ahead with four more Mekong dams amid drought. Indonesian police arrest militant leader associated with Al-Qaeda. Can China become self-reliant in semiconductors? International campaign offers Christmas cheer to Canadians jailed in China. A Expanded coverage of all these stories and so much more can be found on our Facebook page. That's at VOA Asia and the VOAnews.com website. VOA Asia continues. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Clinical trials of a COVID-19 vaccine being developed by Australia's University of Queensland in partnership with biotech company CSL have been abandoned after participants returned false positive HIV test results. The treatment was a key part of Australia's response to the pandemic, and the government had signed a deal to buy 51 million doses. Phil Mercer reports from Sydney.
Vaccines typically take years of painstaking research to develop, but COVID-19 has sent scientists around the world racing to find an effective treatment. The Australian government was no different, but it's announced the sudden termination of clinical trials of a vaccine being developed at the University of Queensland. A small component of the experimental drug was derived from the human immunodeficiency virus, also known as HIV. It's used to give the vaccine stability, helping it to recognize and then neutralize the coronavirus. Some participants recorded false positive HIV test results. Researchers have stressed that the treatments are harmless and don't expose patients to the risk of disease. Biotech giant CSL, which has worked alongside the university team in Queensland, has insisted the vaccine had a strong safety profile. Phase 1 clinical trials involving 216 people began in July. Phases 2 and 3 have been cancelled. The University of Queensland vaccine was one of four potential coronavirus treatments secured by the Australian government for potential use next year, including the Oxford University AstraZeneca drug. Australian Prime Minister Scott Morrison.
At no stage, we believed that all four of those vaccines would likely get through that process. If that had occurred, that would have been truly extraordinary based on the process of vaccine development, not only in this country, but anywhere else. So that's why we spread our risk. The advice that we have received is that the University of Queensland vaccine will not be able to proceed based on the scientific advice, and that will no longer feature as part of Australia's vaccine plan.
Morrison said the decision to end the trial should give Australians great assurance that we are proceeding carefully toward a COVID-19 vaccine. But some experts fear it could damage public confidence in the inoculation program. The government has said Australia's vaccine agreements will be enough to cover the entire population of 25 million people, even if one or two candidates proved unsuccessful. Australia has recorded 28,000 coronavirus cases since the pandemic began, and 908 people have died, according to Johns Hopkins University data. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
Happening now in Asia, Hong Kong media tycoon and democracy advocate Jimmy Lai has been denied bail after being charged under the semi-autonomous Chinese territory's new national security law. The 73-year-old Lai was taken to court in handcuffs Saturday. He faces a charge of collusion with foreign elements to endanger national security. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. We begin a brand new week together on VOA Asia. We're glad to have you with us today. Indonesia is planning to locate its Naval Combat Squad headquarters on a tiny outpost far from Jakarta. And observers are saying that move shows a commitment to push back against Chinese vessels that pass offshore as part of a festering maritime sovereignty dispute. Indonesia's Navy Chief of Staff Yudo Margono was quoted by Radio Free Asia last month as saying the squad's Jakarta headquarters will rebase in the Natuna Islands at a date not yet announced so the Navy can respond more quickly to incidents at sea. That squad enforces maritime sovereignty, including Indonesia's claims in the adjacent Natuna Sea, where Chinese Coast Guard vessels and fishing fleets periodically pass, and that's annoying leaders in Jakarta. Margono said the squad commander could directly lead the battleships in the combat force there. Evan Laksamana is a senior researcher for the Center for Strategic and International Studies Research Group in Jakarta.
In general, the idea is that if there is a potential regional conflict in which the Navy's combat activities and plans have to be activated, it would be around the South China Sea.
The squad operates four vessels and a CN-235 transport aircraft. Its relocation would fit with 15-year-old government plans for bolstering defenses on strategic outlying islands, including the Natuna chain. The 272 Natuna Islands lie about 1,100 kilometers from Jakarta. Indonesia's Navy has acquired more weaponry over the years, and the Coast Guard vowed in September to step up patrols. Together, they must scour the seas around 13,000 islands for terrorists, pirates, and illegal migration, as well as vessels from China and sometimes Vietnam. Indonesian vessels, including non-military units, have already expelled a list of Chinese ships from an exclusive economic zone extending as far as 370 kilometers out to sea from the Natuna chain. In 2016, Indonesia contended with a string of incidents that crested in a standoff with China during an effort to arrest people aboard Chinese fishing vessels. Indonesia sent fighter jets in January this year to drive away Chinese fishing boats and Coast Guard ships. In September, a Chinese Coast Guard ship passed through Indonesia's exclusive economic zone until Jakarta's Maritime Security Agency drove it off. Part of the Natuna Sea northwest of the islands falls within Beijing's claim to about 90% of the wider 3.5 million square kilometer South China Sea. Brunei, Malaysia, the Philippines, Taiwan, and Vietnam contest Chinese claims to features in the fishing-rich, energy-loaded South China Sea that extends from the Natuna chain to Hong Kong. China has the world's third strongest armed forces, and it's ahead of every Southeast Asian country. Other claimant countries have modernized their navies and coast guards, sometimes with the help from the United States. Jay Betambacal is an international maritime affairs professor at the University of the Philippines.
Most of the other countries have already been modernizing their naval forces anyway. So in a way, Indonesia is just following the trend that's already there before.
China is likely to keep passing ships through the Natuna Sea, even with a Natuna-based Navy squad. Chinese ships are collecting data above and underwater along routes popular with their adversaries, says Alexander Huang, strategic studies professor at Tongkang University in Taiwan. Huang added those missions will boost pride among the Chinese before the 100th anniversary of its Communist Party's founding.
They cannot show a sign of weakness, at least before the party centennial in July next year. To celebrate the centennial, they have to show that they are brave, they are courageous, that they can take care of the claimed territory and waters.
Shows of force at sea help China to negotiate from a position of strength with individual governments and the 10-member Association of Southeast Asian Nations bloc. Indonesia has rejected China's basis for its maritime claims, and most recently in a May 26th diplomatic note to United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres. To defuse tension in September, China's national defense minister met with his Indonesian counterpart in Jakarta. We thank Ralph Jennings in Taipei for sharing this story.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Protesters, law scholars, and rights defenders tell VOA a tough royal defamation law in Thailand must be repealed rather than wielded against a young pro-democracy movement. Calls are mounting for the international community to condemn a section of the penal code that smothers criticism of the monarchy. You'll find all the big stories on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. As VOA Asia continues, the United Nations World Food Program was awarded the 2020 Nobel Peace Prize in a virtual ceremony. As Henry Ridgewell reports, the head of the organization warned that hundreds of millions of people are facing starvation around the world, exacerbated by the coronavirus pandemic.
A virtual ceremony amid the global pandemic. The World Food Programme's executive director accepted the prize by video link in Rome, headquarters of the organization, and thanked the Nobel Committee in Oslo.
This Nobel Peace Prize is more than a thank you. It is a call to action. Because of so many wars, climate change, the widespread use of hunger as a political and military weapon, and a global health pandemic that makes all of that exponentially worse, 270 million people are marching towards starvation.
In 2019, the organization provided assistance to almost 100 million people in 88 countries. The Nobel Committee said in addition to combating hunger, the WFP, over its 60-year history, had contributed to bettering conditions for peace in conflict-affected areas and acted as a driving force in efforts to prevent the use of hunger as a weapon of war. The WFP's regional director in East Africa, Michael Dunford, gave VOA his reaction to winning the prize.
This has been a tremendous boost. 2020, as you know, has been one of the most difficult years. COVID has been yet another shock, in addition to some of the worst flooding in Eastern Africa, in addition to a locust plague of biblical proportions, and unfortunately, and this is the biggest concern, conflict and insecurity in so many of the countries that we're operating.
Dunford says the prize is a tribute to the WFP staff.
Working in some of the most difficult locations in the world, in sub-offices deep in the field, be it either in Somalia or South Sudan, and really people who have to put their lives on the line to be able to support people who cannot feed themselves.
The World Food Programme has also coordinated medical logistics during the coronavirus pandemic. The WFP executive director warned that a failure by the international community to address the needs of those affected would cause what he called a hunger pandemic that would dwarf the death toll caused by the virus. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
There is no current evidence that dogs can be infected. Hand washing after contact with all animals is recommended. This protects against other bacteria, such as E. coli and Salmonella, that can pass between animals and humans. For more information, visit www.who.int or www.cdc.gov.
Now on VOA Asia, U.S. automaker Tesla will send delegations to Indonesia next month to discuss potential investment in a supply chain for its electric vehicles. That's according to an Indonesian government statement on Saturday. President Joko Widodo has touted Indonesia's nickel reserves on a number of occasions, telling the Reuters news agency last month that it's very important because Indonesia has a great plan to make it the biggest producer of lithium batteries and it has the biggest nickel reserves. The president and his coordinating minister for maritime investment were on a call with Tesla CEO Elon Musk Friday to discuss investment opportunities from electric vehicles company Tesla in India. Tesla did not immediately respond to a Reuters request for comment. Musk has said he's planning to offer, quote, a giant contract for a long period of time, so long as the nickel is mined efficiently and in an environmentally sensitive way. Indonesia is hoping to develop a full supply chain for nickel at home, especially for extracting battery chemicals, making batteries, and eventually building electric vehicles. Meanwhile, the growing and massive demand for smartphones has made U.S. glassmaker Corning the dominant provider of glass covers for smartphones worldwide. Deanna Mitchell has the story.
For many worldwide, smartphones are used for everything from financial transactions to social media. So when screens break or crack, it can feel like life itself comes to a halt. longtime U.S. glassmaker Corning has spent more than a decade making smartphone glass stronger. That's of particular importance to growing smartphone markets such as India and China, where smartphones are an extravagant purchase for many.
These devices are typically a much higher percentage of a person's GDP in emerging regions. So durability and longevity of that phone becomes a much more critical feature than in other developed countries.
Corning, founded in 1851, has pivoted with the times. In 1879, Thomas Edison went to Corning for glass for his light bulb. Corning's glass is used in the windows for NASA's space shuttles. In the 1950s, Corning became a household name with Corningware cookware, and Steve Jobs used it for the iPhone. Now Corning dominates the worldwide smartphone glass industry. Its latest product, Gorilla Glass Victus, is even tougher, says the company.
Whenever we develop a new glass, we set the bar high. The new glass must be clearly better than our current flagship product and far superior to the competition.
Corning said they were able to improve both drop and scratch performance at the same time, a first in the industry.
Gorilla Glass Victus can drop from 2 meters in height, which is taller than I am, onto a rough surface like asphalt. And it has 2x better scratch performance than our previous glass.
So the next time you drop your phone and it miraculously doesn't shatter, it's most likely thanks to this company in upstate New York. Dina Mitchell for VOA News.
The holiday season atmosphere in New York City is different because of the coronavirus pandemic. But some things just don't change. Nina Vishneva has the story of this year's lighting of the tree at Rockefeller Center, narrated by Anna Rice.
It's hard to get to the Rockefeller Plaza even on foot this year. But that hasn't stopped hundreds of people from making the walk to see the Christmas tree in person. This year, buses blocked the view. The best angles were reserved for people watching the ceremony virtually.
Well, from up here, I can see the tree.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Is it beautiful?
Yeah.
I can see a little bit of a view from between the buses.
The decorated tree provided a spectacular sight for the lighting ceremony. It was a far cry from the first views of the tree when it arrived in New York City, rumpled and bare on one side. A suitable tree for this year, people tweeted, but on this day, the tree cleaned up nicely. A festive light show followed, and the decorated storefront windows added even more to the holiday atmosphere. And in a nod to what a very difficult year 2020 has been, Saks Fifth Avenue took a different approach to its famously luxurious storefront windows. Instead of showcasing expensive items like jewelry, it offered simple and cozy scenes, without anxiety, without a pandemic.
Oh, amongst the pandemic, oh, it's a little depressing, but I'm making the best of it. Yeah, it's pretty sad. I'm a nurse, so we have to be positive. It's going to get better.
Oh, yeah, this is great. I mean, you know, we still have to have it, right? With everything, right? We still have to have a little bit of Christmas, a little bit of the holidays, a little bit of joy and peace. Keep us all safe, right?
And once the tree was lit up, a little bit of magic descended over chilly New York streets.
They had the buses to prevent people from congregating on the street, but it still wasn't going to stop people, especially New Yorkers, tourists, from wanting to see that historic, iconic moment when the trees lit.
It is a tradition that began in 1931 when workers building Rockefeller Center saved some of their wages to buy a tree they decorated with handmade garlands and strings of cranberries. On this day, the tree is with 50,000 different ornaments, and the top is lit up by a crystal Swarovski star. On a typical year, 750,000 people come to see the Rockefeller tree each day. But in 2020, access is limited to no more than 4 people at once, and each can stay no longer than 5 minutes. Maybe just enough time to get a bit of holiday spirit. For Nina Vishnova in New York, Anna Rice, VOA News.
You've been listening to VOA Asia. You can continue online with us on Facebook at VOA Asia, also on Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, and our website. That's voanews.com. As we thank you for joining us, we also thank those who help bring the program to you, our managing editor, Diane Gao, Ira Melman, Doug Bernard, and Keith Lane. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a fantastic day ahead. Be safe. Be well.